from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump square off in their first head-to-head debate tonight on Long Island. Record viewership is predicted. Love it or hate it, the presidential debate format is likely to matter. The candidates are running very close in the national polls. Lester Holt of NBC News is moderating. 90 minutes will tell the story. This hour On Point, we're getting set for the first presidential debate of 2016. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What do you want to see from the candidates on stage tonight? What do you expect? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from San Francisco is Anita Dunn. She's a Democratic strategist and former White House Communications Director, senior advisor to both of President Obama's presidential campaigns. She managed presidential debate prep for Senator, then President Obama. Now she's with SKD Knickerbocker, a public affairs consulting firm. Anita Dunn, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Great to have you here. And Benjamin Ginsburg is with us from New York, Republican lawyer, strategist. Over four presidential campaigns, he's advised both George W. Bush and Mitt Romney, and he's negotiated the details of debates for the RNC. He's now a partner at the law firm Jones Day. Ben Ginsburg, welcome to On Point.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Tom.
I know each of you have interests in this kind of dogs in this fight, a Democrat and a Republican here. But I want to ask each of you what your candidate, I guess we can call them your candidate. I'll double check that with you, Ben. What does Donald Trump need from the debate tonight, in your view?
Well, both these candidates have extraordinarily high negatives going into the debate. So what each of them needs to do is to basically refute those negatives. So in Donald Trump's case, you want him to be able to show people that he can rise to the office of commander-in-chief, not really different from what Mrs. Clinton has to do, but Donald Trump never having held public office before, being more of a policy stranger to voters, has the burden of showing that he's got both the policy and the ability to talk about his policy positions.
And can I just double check with you? You supported George W. Bush, worked very closely with him. You were in the middle of the 2000 recount and all that. You supported Mitt Romney very strongly, right at the heart of his campaign. Are you openly supporting Donald Trump this time, Ben Ginsburg?
Well, I have the terrific task of being an analyst for TV networks. So I present the analysis from the conservative Republican side of things. And I find that saying who I'm going to vote for tends to throw off that analysis.
Here we are in 2016. Anita Dunn, what does Hillary Clinton need out of the debate tonight?
Well, Tom, let me just start by saying that I'm not a television analyst, so I'm going to come clean. I'm for Hillary Clinton.
Okay.
I think she would be a great president, and I think, and so I'm wearing, I'm full disclosure, I'm for Hillary Clinton.
Duly noted.
Okay, so Ben noted accurately that both candidates have challenges coming into the debate. Hillary Clinton's challenge is not to show that she is experienced or qualified to be president. People believe this. They also know that she has plans and substantive policies, and that she understands the job, she understands what is required. Their basic question about Hillary Clinton that I think she can use the debate tonight to address is, you know, are you the person that I trust for the next 4 years with my family, with my job, with my children's future? And this is her great opportunity to speak directly, unfiltered, to the American people. Someone who has spent her entire career in public service really thinking about these issues and getting things done. So I think she has a great opportunity. And all of this talk about how do you prepare for this Trump and that Trump actually obscures the fact that this is her opportunity to speak unfiltered, you know, outside of the caricatures, outside of the preconceived notions to the American people. That's what she needs to do tonight.
Ben, do you think Donald Trump is going to let her speak outside of the caricatures? In the primary season, he was a real slugger up there, the great humiliator, Little Marco and Lion Ted and all that. Do you think we'll have that again tonight? Will he go hard and rough at Secretary Clinton?
I think the asymmetrical possibilities that he could do that is what's causing discomfort for Clinton supporters as I hear him talking about it. He's also shown that since the conventions, maybe within the last 3 weeks to a month, he is at least capable of portraying a very different persona. And so I think that the mystery about which Donald Trump will show up tonight is actually one of the true assets that he has going into the debate.
Anita, how about it? If the humiliator shows up, how does that work? How does Hillary counter that? He already tweeted over the weekend that he might put Jennifer Flowers in the front row, I think was the tweet. Of course, she with her alleged dalliance with the secretary's husband, President Clinton. If he goes rough, if he goes low, he did in the primary debates again and again, what's Hillary Clinton's best response?
I think he'll be making a real mistake if he goes low. And I think that a lot of this pre-debate stuff is, you know, it's almost like pre-NFL game where the opponents are trying to psych each other out and are using a little misdirection. It would be a real mistake for him to go that route against Hillary Clinton.
Why?
I think.
Couldn't put her off her stride? You say she has to look like a trustworthy person if he starts bringing up alleged scandals and, you know, and infidelities. It just makes it messy. How does she keep her poise and her seriousness of purpose?
But let's not forget, he's actually allegedly trying to win the presidency here. And the voters that he needs to talk to at this point, that he needs to convince to come back to him, are independent voters, they're undecided voters, and a lot of them are women voters. And I think that a bullying Donald Trump for everyone to look at, you know, maybe up to 100 million people, is not the right way to go about getting women voters back. So I think you have to keep your eye on the long ball here, Tom, which is he's trying to win the presidency. What does he need to do? He needs to go prosecute his case about the last 30 years, it's let you down, it's left us behind, we need change. She needs to make the case that he isn't the person temperamentally qualified, he doesn't have the plans, he's not the person you trust to be at the head of the most powerful nation on earth. That's the way this race is shaping up, and that's actually what they need to do tonight.
Ben, what about the format? This is not primary debate season where you've got, in Trump's case, you had, 16 or 17 people up there altogether in the field and a whole lot of them on that stage at one time. When it's one-on-one and it's not just chipping out short answers, because tonight, what do we have, 6 different segments, 15 minutes each on one subject. How does that affect the encounter, Ben?
It's very different. You're absolutely right. Donald Trump never was in a debate with less than 3 other candidates on the stage with him. One-on-one is very different. This format is different. The way those 15-minute segments work is that Lester Holt will ask a question, then each candidate gets a full 2 minutes to respond, and then they engage in, I'm sure, substantive and witty interchange with each other.
Substantive and witty. Your tongue is deep in your cheek there.
I'll be watching like everyone else. But what that means, the 2-minute segments are really kind of the most interesting ones because it is fairly easy, I think, to look substantive in short bursts. It is precisely what Donald Trump says in the last part of those 2-minute segments and in the back and forth where he's debating against somebody who does have more experience and depth with the policies. So I'd agree with Anita that what he has to do is not get into a tit for tat on policy, even if he could. It is much more saying things need a change. I'm the change agent. She certainly is not the change agent.
Will she try to go policy wonk here, Anita? Can she win with that? And how does she answer Donald Trump's There's a kind of fundamental argument here that, look, she's more of the same. I'm the big change. Come with me.
I don't think she goes policy wonk. I think she does talk to the American people honestly and directly about the challenges we face as a nation, but how we have to meet those challenges. That is her sweet spot. That is where she is a very, very effective person when she is having the conversation, not trying to give the big speech, but having a conversation with the American people. And I think that one of the effective contrasts she can draw tonight is going to be between someone who clearly knows what they're talking about, has thought through these issues, and has real plans versus Trump, who at the end of the day doesn't have a lot to say. And people have to walk out of the debate asking themselves, who's the right person. There are a lot of proof points that she can use against Donald Trump without having to, you know, lecture people or be a boring policy wonk. That's not what she's going to do tonight.
What do you mean he doesn't have a lot to say? He's been talking for months and months and months now. He's said a lot. You may not like it, but he's said a lot, hasn't he?
Well, he doesn't have a lot to say when it comes to substantive policy and ideas and plans for what you actually do about the problems. He talks a great deal, and sometimes in a very entertaining, did he really say that way, because he's a television performer, and he's a reality TV performer, and he really uses the medium very well. But voters come into these debates with a higher expectation about what they're going to hear in terms of where this country's going to go.
Where this company is going to go. James Fallows looked at all this for The Atlantic and said what we see here tonight is right brain versus left brain, gut versus any portion of the brain at all, impulse versus calculation, id versus superego, and of course, man versus woman. Ben Ginsburg, how much does Donald Trump's reality TV years, and it is years, how much does that help him?
Well, it certainly helps him being a presence on the stage. Whether it helps to translate into what he needs to do substantively is another question. I mean, look, it's worth noting that these are the two least popular presidential candidates in history. And there is an unusually high number of undecided voters, about 20% according to the latest polls. What Donald Trump has to do is show people he's got both the temperament and the substance to be president. What Hillary Clinton has to do is to convince voters to overcome their doubts about her honesty and trustworthiness. I believe it is easier to look substantive and to show you've got a decent temperament in a 90-minute debate than it is to all of a sudden say, I'm honest and trustworthy, and make people believe that.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the first presidential debate of 2016 tonight. Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump live together in a huge spotlight, and the challenges of each, what they each need to do. My guests, Anita Dunn. She's a Democratic strategist joining us today out of San Francisco and SKD Knickerbocker. She's managed presidential debate preparations for Barack Obama and been right in the middle of all kinds of White House communications. Benjamin Ginsburg is with us from Jones Day, Republican lawyer and strategist, worked with George W. Bush, with Mitt Romney, has been at the heart of negotiating deals around how debates will unfold. We're looking at tonight's debate, and you can join us. What do you want to see, hear, learn tonight? What do you hope for in this debate? Well, I guess I should ask, what do you fear, and does somebody have an advantage going in here? Who and why? Here was Donald Trump in an interview with Fox Business on Thursday, talked about his theory of how to get ready for the first presidential debate.
I've seen people prepare so much that they get up there and they get locked to, or they can't speak. You know, you've seen that too, where they lock themselves in a cabin for 3 weeks and they don't want to do anything else. And I don't know. You have to be yourself, and you have to go up and you just have to do it. So I'm really very much campaigning at the same time I am preparing.
Donald Trump, he's not going to lock himself in a cabin for 3 weeks. Hillary Clinton says, look, this is serious. She's preparing seriously for the debate with Donald Trump.
I'm doing my homework. Donald Trump is a self-proclaimed great debater who won every one of the Republican debates. So I take nothing for granted. I think this will be a difficult, challenging debate, which is why I'm going to be thinking hard about what I need to present to the American people.
A self-proclaimed great debater, a kind of left-handed compliment there. Anita Dunn, Ben Ginsburg, stand by. Lots of callers for the two of you. Camille in New Orleans. Thanks for calling, Camille. You're on the air. What are you looking for tonight?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm really looking for an actual discourse between the candidates on issues that the American people care about. I feel like this election for the past year has been so muddied and things that just aren't even real to us as Americans and what we're looking for and what we're looking for in healthcare and education and foreign policy and college tuition. I'm looking to see, you know, an actual discourse back and forth on what each candidate plans to do if they were to become president. And so far, I haven't seen that in this election.
Actual discourse. Anita Dunn, what's the history here? Can Americans fairly expect that? I mean, with reality TV in the background, some may have little hope of that tonight. On the other hand, you know, I've seen plenty of debates that were not exactly perfect seminars on policy?
Tom, and it's an interesting question. Camille, I couldn't agree with you more, and the American people couldn't agree with you more. If you go back and you look at the first Kennedy-Nixon debate, you'll be stunned at how substantive the discussion was, how civil the discourse was, and how much people really did learn about the proposals the candidates had and the differences between the candidates, not in an attacking way, but in a here's what I think is different from what you think way. I think that that's exactly what a good debate should be. Ben and I served on a bipartisan group of people making proposals for debates. One of our proposals was that the candidates themselves had to be held accountable for producing that kind of debate by giving them more leeway in terms of the format so that they could make the decision, this is going to be a real discussion that addresses what the American people want to hear.
That presumes that they want to turn it into a policy conversation. They might not, or any given candidate might not. They might prefer a slugfest.
Tom, I think that this is the biggest audience either candidate will face to address the American people live about what their plans are, mm-hmm. and they will be well-served to actually do what the American people expect them to do, which is talk to them about what they'll do as president. Camille makes a great point. This is actually what the voters want to hear. And, you know, good candidates tend to go where the voters go.
Is Donald Trump going to take that on board, Ben Ginsburg? I mean, he said, I don't want to get stuffed away in a cabin for 3 weeks getting all bound up about this. I want to be myself. Well, if he was himself in the primary debates, that was a street fighter. And he went consistently for the most sort of humiliation that he could unload on his opponent. What about tonight?
Well, each candidate prepares differently for his or her own preferences in a debate. So the sort of pregame towel snapping that you hear from candidates and their staffs, you should probably not pay a lot of attention to.
Yeah.
If you're going to talk about Donald Trump's reality TV career, then it's also true that he was so successful at it because he could read an audience. So Camille's question points up that what the audience wants to hear now is much more substance. And what the debates do provide is the candidates' really first and only chance to provide an unfettered look at themselves. In other words, the questions are straightforward, but the format provides more give and take than usual. There are no teleprompters, no notes being brought in. In fact, there are no 30-second commercials characterizing them. It is their opportunity to present their persona and their programs.
But is Trump a substance candidate, Ben? And I ask that, I have to ask it with a certain kind of strange respect because he's done well, but he seems to have done it more on the basis of attitude than on the basis of programs.
Well, the whole point behind his candidacy is one of leadership as opposed to substance. I mean, I think his argument is that he is a great leader. As a great leader, he will know how to make decisions, and he will hire great people to be able to provide the substance. So it is perhaps not your traditional candidacy, but that's what his argument is. And if you're going to read the polls today, half the people in the country are buying that.
Anita, if Donald Trump just says great, great, great tonight, does that work? And how does Hillary Clinton pop that balloon if she wants to or tries to?
You know, the American people are the ones at the end of the day who decide what's successful tonight and whether they heard what they wanted to hear from their next president. So I'm not going to sit here and judge whether it works, but I do think there is a huge difference, Tom, between the general election debates and the primary debates, which are played to a relatively small audience.
Yep.
General election debates are to a much broader audience, to the American people, and to undecided and independent voters, not voters who have necessarily made up their minds and are watching because they want to see how their candidate does, but to people who are making up their minds about who they're going to vote for and who may think that great, great, great isn't quite specific enough, certainly compared to the fact that Hillary Clinton will be, I think, very specific in terms of her plans and where she wants to lead the country.
Roger in Tampa, Florida. Roger, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
All right. My point is that for me, it's actually going to be the moderator that's going to determine who I vote for. I would say I'm on the fence, but the reality is you could probably say I've actually crossed the fence several times. I only crossed the last time Thursday after hearing all of the quote-unquote that all the abuses from the quote-unquote foundation of the Trump campaign. And after hearing about all that, if you want to hear about the Clinton Foundation issues, please make that look like a joke and how serious that they are.
So what do you want from Lester Holt then tonight, or how will he matter to you?
For him, what's most important is that he let the candidates decide themselves. I am very confident, just from all the data, that Clinton's going to come out on top. And the worst thing he can do is take away some of that impact by trying to get himself in the story. Politico did a great article about how lying can take many forms, and he just can't try to get into it because it's going on too much. So I hope he stays out of it. That way Clinton can capitalize on the advantage he's going to get.
Let me ask my guest, Roger in Tampa. Thank you. Ben Ginsburg, what do you want from Lester Holt? To let him run or to get in there and fact check?
I want him to let him run. Anita mentioned the bipartisan group that we served on together to look at debates. What's true is that the debate should be about the candidates. And the moderator needs to toss out the opening questions, to keep time, to be sure that each candidate gets to make follow-up points.
But Trump's been throwing out whopper after whopper lately, according to the reporting that I've been reading. Anita, should Lester Holt let him run with that?
Ben and I, and frankly, Roger, all agree on this. We think that when the moderator becomes a participant in the debate, it's problematic for the debate itself. You know, the two candidates are fully capable of...
You mean let Hillary Clinton fact-check him?
Not necessarily sit there and fact-check him,
okay,
but sit there and make her points and show the differences between them. But if you have Lester, if you put the moderator in the position of having to be the ultimate fact-checker, I think you create a very problematic situation in which the candidates no longer control the debate. It's really like a joint news conference.
Interesting. A lot of different opinions about that. Anita Dunn and Ben Ginsburg, I want to thank both of you for being with us. Anita at SKD Knickerbocker, with us from San Francisco today, very experienced in the Democratic world of presidential debating. Anita, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me on, Tom.
And Ben Ginsburg at Jones Day, worked with W. Bush and Mitt Romney. Benjamin Ginsburg, thank you so much.
Thank you, Tom.
Let's turn right now to two great reporters who are all over this. Sahil Kapoor is with us. He's a national reporter for Bloomberg, covering the 2016 race, joins us from New York. Sahil, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me back.
And Karen Tumulty is with us. She is in East Elmhurst in New York, practically at Hofstra already, ready for the debates tonight. National political correspondent for The Washington Post. Karen, wonderful to have you here.
It's great to be here.
So, Karen, how do you look at this? Who needs what, in your view, tonight?
You know, I realize the numbers suggest that there are a lot of undecided voters out there, but I just don't understand who those people could be, given the contrast between these two candidates. I mean, who hasn't figured out by now which of the two, if either, they prefer? But I think that the challenge for both of them is going to be to convince people that this election is very important and that it is actually crucial to get to the polls and vote. And so, you know, I don't really think we should even be looking at this debate as a who wins, who loses kind of, you know, prospect. I think it is both of them getting a chance to make the case that people actually have to show up and vote for them.
A kind of an enthusiasm contest here. Who can fire up their supporters most? Sahil, do you agree? And if so, what's the primary ammunition that Hillary Clinton will bring in to fire up her potential supporters? What about Donald Trump?
I think the biggest problem Hillary Clinton has is to convince people out there that she is honest and trustworthy. That is the single biggest fact that polls show holding her back. Now, that's especially a problem with millennials, which is one of three major elements of the Obama coalition, along with minorities and unmarried women. They are not enthusiastic about her, and many of them are threatening to either stay home or support a third-party candidate like Gary Johnson or Jill Stein. That's her big problem. Now, in terms of your point about undecided voters, I'm with Karen that these are two of the most well-known people in the country, have been for several decades. It's hard to imagine why people would still be undecided, but the reason is they dislike both these candidates so much. I suspect we'll see that undecided number go down. Where it goes is the million-dollar question. Now, as far as Trump goes, I think his problem is the issue of temperament and the fact that a lot of people simply don't think he's qualified to sit in that office and make these big decisions. He has to do something about that. This is probably his last best chance to improve those numbers. He has to go 90 minutes without kind of lashing out, without having a blow up, without... Now, I realize that's a very low bar to set, but it is the bar that the American people have put forth to him. They like the fact that he's an outsider, the fact that he's a change agent. They're willing to accept that he doesn't, you know, he's not very well versed on policy, but he needs to do something about the temperament and the qualification doubts that people have about him.
Sahil, what's the evidence of that assertion that the bar American people have set for Donald Trump is that he not lash out? He lashed out a lot in the primaries and he won.
Oh, I don't mean that that's necessarily the bar the American people have set. The point is they're willing to put up with the fact that, you know, they're willing to north of 40% of American voters are willing to support him, even though most of them don't believe he has the right temperament to be president, right? So I think in a two-way contest, when it's one candidate versus another, the American voters are willing to put up with some cognitive dissonance. What I'm trying to say is that these are the single biggest facts holding him back.
Let's go to Catherine in Savannah, Georgia. Catherine, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just had a long conversation with my dad about this. We're both lifelong Democrats and incredulous that Donald Trump has made it this far. And we're trying to figure out what would be the best strategy for Hillary to display, you know, more heart. And I kind of look to what Shonda Rhimes said in her statement about Hillary, which is that she's the smart girl. And a friend of mine, Jonathan Raab, wonderful writer, called her Hermione. And she needs to kind of own that and make fun of it, be self-deprecating, you know, say I'm not the warmest and fuzziest person you're ever going to meet, but do you really want that in your president? And just own the nerdy girl badge of honor and be light on her feet.
Catherine, would you have the guts to be self-deprecating in front of Donald Trump, who is quite ready to attack?
I think at this stage, because so much is at stake and she's been tanking in the polls, I think I'd kind of go for broke. I would.
Go for broke on being the smart girl, the nerdy girl, maybe. Catherine, I appreciate your call. Karen, what do you say?
I think that one of her strengths has always been, you know, both her understanding of policy, and I think she has a pretty good ability to explain it. So going with that strength is smart.
To make a contrast, do you think, in that case, to Mr. Trump or something else?
Well, I do think you run the risk of, you know, Al Gore and his disastrous first debate in 2000 sort of came off as, you know, a know-it-all and almost robotic in the number of times, for instance, mm-hmm. that he repeated the phrase lockbox.
Yeah.
So I do think there is, and I've seen Hillary Clinton do this, she has an ability to explain policy with a fluidity that can really be a strength of hers. Whether she shows that tonight, I don't know. And also reminding people that this election is about them, and that you know, there are choices being made here that are going to affect the quality of their lives and the quality of the lives of, you know, people around them. Her husband, Bill Clinton, was just a genius at that. And, you know, I suspect the two of them have been having a lot of conversations about this.
Does she get better in the presence of male dominance behavior, which many people see in Donald Trump's profile, or not?
It has worked to her benefit in the past, both when Rick Lazio, her opponent for the Senate in 2000, charged across the stage at her.
In New York State, yep.
And when Barack Obama said, "You're likable enough, Hillary," and, you know, John Edwards, I think it was, who stood on stage and made fun of her jacket, that has often been a situation that has worked to her advantage.
And Sahil, Donald Trump, can he go with the mild presentation, if that's his bar, to look presidential? Do you think he has it in for 90 minutes, Sahil?
Tom, I think the wild card here is that Donald Trump has never had to spend 90 minutes on stage with a woman on equal footing and potentially face attacks. This will be very interesting to see how he handles that. Now, his problem is that he's not particularly knowledgeable on the issues, but he's very good at branding. Now, Hillary Clinton is the exact opposite. She's extremely knowledgeable on the issues, but she's not good at branding herself. And as a result, caricatures have a way of sticking to her. So, yes, I think Donald Trump is capable of going 90 minutes without some sort of bizarre Rick Lazio moment, but
We'll see. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
This On Point podcast and following message are brought to you by Goldman Sachs. For answers to the world's most pressing economic questions, from the future of finance to the disruptive potential of artificial intelligence, tune in to Exchanges at Goldman Sachs, the firm's podcast. Each episode features in-depth discussions with some of the firm's leading experts on the markets, evolving industries, and the global economy. Subscribe to Exchanges at Goldman Sachs on iTunes, Stitcher, or SoundCloud, or listen at gs.com/podcast.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking about the first presidential debate of 2016. Tonight, Hofstra. Karen Timilty is there. She's with the Washington Post, national political correspondent, and joins us right now. Sahil Kapoor is with us. He's in New York covering the 2016 election for Bloomberg. You can join us as well this hour. If you were advising the candidates, what would you tell Donald Trump today? What would you tell Hillary Clinton? And what do you expect, what do we need from the moderator tonight, from Lester Holt? Should he be fact-checking in real time? Should he let them roam free? Donald Trump could go on the attack. Here's an interesting exchange. This is back in 2008, South Carolina Democratic presidential debate. This was Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton. They clashed over comments that Obama had made about Ronald Reagan. He'd argued that Hillary and Bill Clinton had been out on the campaign trail distorting his record on that.
You talked about Ronald Reagan being a transformative political leader. I did not mention his name.
Your husband you, did.
Well, I'm here. He's
okay,
not.
Well, and I can't tell who I'm running against sometimes.
Well, I think we both have very passionate and committed spouses who stand up for us, and I'm proud of that.
Barack Obama got just a little rough, and Hillary Clinton, I stood up to it right there. Whether you think it was effective or not, that's your call. Here was just one of those trademark Trump moments, launched a full-on assault against former Florida Governor Jeb Bush. Bush attempted to lecture Trump, saying that the world stage is significantly harder than the debate stage.
This is a tough business to run for president.
Oh, I know. You're a tough guy, Jeb.
And we need to have a leader that is
real tough.
You're never going to be president of the United States
tough,
by insulting
Jeb, yeah?
your way to
well,
the president.
Let's
presidency.
See. I'm at 42 and you're at 3. So,
Doesn't matter.
Far I'm doing better.
Doesn't matter.
So far I'm doing better. You know, you started off over here, Jeb. You're moving over further and further. Pretty soon you're going to be off the end.
Karen Timilty, how much of that tone can Donald Trump use and get away with it in gender terms, maybe?
I think zero.
I
think that the Donald Trump who would be best suited for tonight's stage, and again, I'm doing rampant punditry here.
Rampant.
But his single best moment on the debate stage, his single most effective, I think, was when Ted Cruz came after him for New York values. Do you remember that?
Yes.
And Trump responded with a really sort of heartfelt and emotional discussion of what kind of values New Yorkers showed in the wake of 9/11. And I think it was something that people didn't really expect of Donald Trump, you know, and that is the kind of side that a general election electorate would be more impressed with than, because we are talking here not about just Republican primary voters. And that is the kind of side I think that people would be very surprised to see tonight, and surprise would work in his favor.
But, Sahil, do you think that Donald Trump believes or has been persuaded that he can go down that road? I mean, he has made a lot of headway with the fierce sort of chest-thumping approach.
I completely agree with Karen here. I think his base will like if he does go rougher, if he does take that attitude that he had in the Republican primary, he will fire up his base. But that's not really what he needs to do now. His base is there. They're not going anywhere. What he needs to do is improve his numbers, particularly with suburban women and with college-educated white voters, which are a big weakness and a big opportunity for him right now. And to do that, I think he cannot come off as a bully. He can't do these sorts of schoolyard taunts that worked in the primary that you just played with Jeb Bush. And most importantly, he can't come off as thin-skinned. It would play perfectly into Hillary Clinton's narrative. As she said in the convention, a man you can bait with a tweet is not someone we want with the nuclear codes. Yeah. This is something that he has to convince the public that he's not someone who's going to fly off the handle. And that, again, as we've been talking about, that he has the temperament to sit in that chair and make the biggest, most important decisions.
That was a strong, that was a strong bite. He does like to do the fiery tweets. Doris in New York, Ithaca, New York. Hi, Doris. You're on the air.
Hi. My comment about Hillary would be that I think it's just so obvious that she's the most capable, intelligent, knowledgeable. But I think that she needs to not be shrill. I thought in some of the rallies, the films and some of the rallies I saw, that she just sounded really shrill. And I don't think she needs to do that. I think she just needs to be dignified and presidential and not afraid to be feminine, really.
Doris, may I ask you, and with respect, but you know, sometimes people say to a female candidate, don't be shrill, and it can sound like, you know, don't be tough in making your case. Do you mean don't be tough? Can she be tough and still, by your lights, not be shrill?
No, I think she can be tough and firm, mm-hmm. and, you know, hold her ground. I think she's very capable of that, but being just, you know, like her voice sometimes would get really loud, and I guess shrill is just the only word I can think
yeah,
of for that.
Yeah, but let me take it to Karen, if I may, and thank you, Doris. Karen, what about the gender dynamics up there tonight and the just presentation? We've talked about Donald Trump's presentation. What about Hillary's?
Well, I do think, you know, people do talk about things, you know, and it is an unfair gender standard that Reince Priebus criticizes her for not smiling enough at a national security forum where yeah. she's talking about terrorism.
Yeah.
People do kind of zero in at the timbre of her voice. These are things that usually would not be aimed at male candidates. But, you know, she's got to figure out a way around that, because there is a slice of the population out there that is going to hear this through a gender filter.
I mean, but presentation does matter, even for men. The famous, of course, confrontation of Richard Nixon and John F. Kennedy. Nixon sweaty, JFK cool, JFK and wins.
You recall, you know, famously, that people who heard that debate on the radio thought that Nixon had won. So, yes, that was all about presentation.
That is pretty wild. Sahil, what do you think on the gender? If there's, well, there just is a gender meeting of genders here. How do you see that playing out?
I mean, it's hard to understand this presidential race and the dynamics without, you know, understanding the fact that gender is a big part of it. In the debate, there will inevitably be a certain sect of people that spends more time analyzing Hillary Clinton's attire than, you know, her policy stances or what she says. It's just, you know, it's just kind of the society we live in. And to Karen's point, I think there is a bit of a double standard in terms of presentation and tone. I remember in one of her debates with Bernie Sanders, a lot of pundits, I think mostly men, were talking about her voice when Bernie Sanders is kind of objectively the shoutiest candidate we've seen on a debate stage in a long time. So yes, I think style does matter. You know, it could be unfair, but it's a reality, and Hillary Clinton does have to address that. She, I suspect, will try to appear calm, collected, knowledgeable, try to portray the best side of her, or try to portray at least a side of her that the people who like her, you know, like about her.
Karen, there was the notion of unnerving the opponent here. Donald Trump did that in the primaries, tweeting he might put Jennifer Flowers in the front row. Mark Cuban, a billionaire who has been outspoken in opposition to Donald Trump and very derisive about Donald Trump. There's been chatter about him being in the audience tonight, maybe even him in the front row. I don't know if that's going to happen. But what about things that could throw the other candidate off? Do you expect them to be throwing, you know, little grenades here?
Well, I do think that they are both going to be looking for ways to be getting into under each other's skin. One thing, though, that I think people need to remember about this whole stunt about who's going to be sitting in the front row,
mm-hmm.
the vast majority of the media are not even in the hall. We are all at a filing center that is remote from where the debate is actually.
Does that matter? How does that matter,
well,
Karen?
Well, it's in part, we will, so as a result, as people are covering it, as people are seeing it on television at home, they will hear the audience reaction, but there will not be the cameras turning to get a lot of reaction shots from the audience or anything.
Right.
The few cameras that are actually in the room are going to be focused on those two candidates.
But wasn't the point there that just the presence of certain people might just throw one or the other candidate off their stride?
And that is, you know, I think that you know, if you are so not having your mind into this game that you can be thrown off
yeah.
by somebody who is sitting quietly in the front row,
yes.
then you probably shouldn't be on that stage in the first place.
Richard in Columbus, Ohio. Thank you for calling, Richard. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks. Yeah. I guess my take tonight is I don't think Trump has to do anything different. I don't think it really matters so much what he does as long as he's somewhat polite. But I think the real opportunity here is with Hillary, and I think she has to do two things. One is overcome some of just the trust issue. She has to hit that head on. And two is I think she has to be somewhat on the offensive because he has a long list of things that she can attack or point out, regardless of what the moderator says or what Trump says. I think she has to take control of the debate if she wants to come out ahead tonight.
Take control. That could be a tall order. On this issue of trust and things people might have to answer for or have to explain, I mean, they could both throw things down. Sahil, who do you think is more likely to try and, you know, toss some mess of an allegation in the other's lap, and who's got the tougher challenge in responding?
Well, I think it'll be different for the two of them. Hillary Clinton she's made clear, and her campaign has made clear, that she's going to try to fact check Trump in the debate. Now, Trump has a tendency, more so than we generally see with major presidential nominees, to speak off the cuff and to play fast and loose with these things.
With the truth, you're saying.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's what she's going to try to point out, and she's going to try to catch him in a misstatement or, you know, an untruth. What he's going to try to do is he's going to try to bait her with these controversies that have been dogging her, I think, since the beginning of her campaign. Her sort of parsing and lawyerly approach to answering emails, questions about her email server, or the conflict of interest with the State Department and the Clinton Foundation. I think he's going to try to bring these up, and this is going to be a real challenge for her because one of the reasons I think she has such a problem with the trust issue is that when she answers these questions, she kind of comes off very lawyerly. She parses. She offers some half-truths. She doesn't come off as forthcoming, and she gives people the impression that she's got something to hide. I think if she handles this well, then I think it'll be a good night for her.
We'll see. Steve in Willow Grove, Pennsylvania. Steve, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Thank you, Tom. Yeah, it's very simple. All she has to do is provoke him, and he's easily provoked. And once she's provoked, he goes irate. Simple. Straightforward.
Nothing to it. How would you do that, then? How would you pull that off, Steve? How would you provoke Donald Trump?
Look at his way he uses money and the way he lawsuits people who he doesn't agree with. His use of money, like even his airplane, is paid by U.S. voters. The one he's using right now, flying around, we're paying for that airplane.
Because it's getting his company's being paid for the plane, and there's, well, I don't know about U.S. voters, but okay, go after the money. Maybe you're right. And can he be so provoked? People listening and responding online along these lines, and there's all kinds of views here. I mean, Tony says to us, Clinton speaks in political cliché. Trump speaks plain English. Like what he says or not, he sounds genuine. Clinton sounds like lies, maybe. On the other hand, Scott says on Twitter, Trump is an entertainer. Ronald Reagan was an actor. Ronald Reagan got two terms. What about how you provoke Donald Trump, Karen? And what about the comparison to Ronald Reagan, who also came out of the world of entertainment and media? Is Trump comparable?
No. Ronald Reagan was the governor of the largest state in the country.
Yeah, for a long time.
And Ronald Reagan also came to this endeavor with a very clear and consistent political philosophy. Mm-hmm. We do not, you know, with Donald Trump, it is hard to figure out what he is. Is he a conservative? On some things, but is he a liberal? Well, yeah, I mean, he advocates big government in quite a few areas. So I think that the differences with Ronald Reagan are far more pronounced. And by the way, the media culture is very, very different than it was in the 1970s and the 1980s, and really going back to the 1960s when Ronald Reagan rose to political prominence and ultimately became, you know, the head of an entire political movement.
Mm-hmm. And that we just don't see. Well, we don't know yet. We don't know where Donald Trump ends up. Joe in Kirksville, Missouri. Joe, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. My question, or I guess my comment, is just back one of your earlier points on whether Donald Trump will use substance in his debate and whether he needs to. And I would say, no, he doesn't need to, because he's got so much support so far from not using substance. He's obviously going to match Hillary Clinton with a little bit of facts tonight, just a little bit, but he's gotten where he has with not much substance. So it's whether he can get those 20% undecided voters with a little bit of substance, and I think he'll just do a little bit. He doesn't need to do that much.
Just sprinkle it on, a little salt and pepper of substance, but keep up with the big kind of attitude that has taken him far. Sahil, what about it? Can he just drive the enthusiasm with the same meat and potatoes? Does he really have to go presidential to win that decisive margin?
Well, he has to pass a certain bar. He has to prove that he has like a, you know, at least a base sort of elementary level of knowledge. You can't not show that. Now, George W. Bush was not, you know, an expert on policy issues, but he rehearsed, and he had these sorts of short, crisp, general answers when he was asked about a topic. And as a result, I think he ended up passing that bar, low though it may have been. Hillary Clinton is an expert on these policy issues, and she can talk at length about any one of them for a long time. It's a danger for Trump if he ends up getting a question about, you know, something that's happening, say, in the Middle East, in Egypt or Iraq or Syria, and he simply does not understand the question, or he isn't capable of speaking on the topic, and he just exposes the fact that he simply doesn't know what's going on. That's a real danger for him, and it's a problem he's going to have. I don't think it's a problem Hillary Clinton's going to have. Even Reagan was described by a lot of his critics as someone who, you know, not a policy wonk. There were other things about him that people liked, but he passed that bar by showing he had a base level of knowledge that, you know, that the voters could at least live with.
Karen, the Clinton campaign is saying don't grade Donald Trump on a curve, you know, hold him to a serious standard. This is the presidency. Do you think the media will respond that way or not?
I'm so reluctant to even predict that because it is so... It's so meaningless almost in this day and age to talk about the media with one label like that. There will be an immediate reaction on things like social media, Twitter. Mm-hmm. That could seep into cable. By tomorrow, you will have a whole set of different kinds of analysis in kind of traditional media, print publications. There's going to be a whole set of waves of this.
Layer on layer, and the fate of the presidency in the balance right there. It'll be amazing to watch tonight. Karen Tumbley with The Washington Post, already there, ready for Hofstra. Thank you so much, Karen, for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Sahil Kapoor with Bloomberg. Thanks, Sahil, for being with us.
Thank you, Tom. Great to be on.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.